You're listening to Speak Free Radio, the free speech internet radio platform.
Live from Crestview Studios, Florida, it's the Dave and Duke Call-In Show. And now here's your co-host, Speak Free Radio owner David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke. Limber up your dialing fingers.
Hello, folks. This is Dave Gahari. It is 6:02 p.m. Central Time. That is not good at all. So, let's find out why that is. All right. And all right, it's working. I take that back. It's working. Okay. For a second, it wasn't working. All right. SpeakFreeRadio.com. That's where we're coming from. And obviously, you can access that from SpeakFreeRadio.com. Right there, you got that little black triangle on your computer to listen to the show. You got a bunch of tabs, call and chat, podcasts, and a couple other ones. If you want to come into the show, you click the call and chat tab, and you click on the Dave and Duke call and show image. That'll bring you to the waiting room in the studio. If you want to listen to the previous shows, you click on podcasts and you click on that Dave and Duke call and show icon. And that will give you access to all of the shows that we did. I think except for one, that one went off into the ether somewhere. It should actually be all of them, but today is, let's see, today is May 12, so I don't see May 5 there. Maybe that one disappeared too. I have to find out. It might not have been recorded for some reason. But at any rate, here we are right now, and nobody's here but me. Usually there's people in the studio, but there's nobody there, not even Dr. Duke. So I will tell you what the show's all about. It's obviously a call-in show where anyone from all over the world could ask Dr. Duke a question or make a comment, and then he has 2 minutes to answer that. And I think we're all, those of us who have heard the show before, familiar with what happens right before that 2 minutes expires. We'll hear that sound. And then you'll hear the sound again on the 2 minutes. And again, it's all predicated upon how busy we are. If we are not too busy, then we will let Dave elaborate a bit more. If it starts to get full, then I've got to jump in and move things along. Today is Mother's Day, 2024. So happy Mother's Day to all you moms out there. Happy Mother's Day to my mom. She passed a couple of years ago, but still, I'd like to say happy Mother's Day to her. So, since we are all alone and there's nobody to talk to except for you, I found a great article written by Paul Craig Roberts, who I know. I haven't met him, I've communicated with him many times over the years. And he is, very well known. He was in public office, as a bureaucrat. Let me read a little bit about Mr. Roberts from Zyopedia. He was born actually last year, 1939. So he's 85 now. He was born in Atlanta, Georgia. And he held a sub-cabinet office in, I think it was the Reagan administration. So he was the U.S. Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for economic policy under President Reagan. Let's see. Dave is sending me a message. Okay. I can't understand what he's saying. But I don't know. But at any rate, let me... Oh, there it is. It's all filled up now. Holy mackerel. Something happened. Don't know what. But at any rate, we're going to get back to that because all of a sudden the place is all filled up. And I'll give you the ongoing challenge here, which is if anyone can let us know of a greater existential threat to humanity and free speech other than organized international Jewry. Let us know, and we will quit the show. Contemporaneously, if anyone can let us know of someone who can deliver that message about Jewish supremacism more effectively than Dr. David Duke, again, let us know, and we'll quit. And that is it. We will quit. I promise.
We're going to make them beat both of us, so they have to beat better than Dr. David Duke and Dave Gahar.
Yes, yes. That's tough, Dave. How are you, my friend?
That's impossible, I think.
That's impossible. I like your shirt.
Well, I did that just for you.
Thank you.
It's your little Navy, man.
Yes, it's coming up. You know, yeah. It's coming up next month, the observance
about the time of
the massacre.
It was a terrible massacre.
And terrible massacre.
It's a good example of the total disconnect in our country between facts and reality. Because, I mean, the truth is, any other country that would knowingly, and yes, they knowingly attacked Liberty. They knew it was an American ship. We had a major American flag on it. We had the letters on the side of the ship, which is on the international registry. They buzzed the ship for 24 hours. We have actually their plane conversations recorded. And we had Mr. Thomas More, the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, made a big, long statement on it. He showed there's no question about the fact that they knew exactly what they were doing. And they were trying to sink the ship. They even came in with machine guns on the rafts for the sailors. So that because they wanted no survivors. Because they were trying to do this thing and accomplish this thing quickly. But the people on the Liberty were so courageous, so brave. They braved the napalm. They risk their lives to keep that ship afloat, and they did, and that caused this to be exposed. And also the captain, as you know all about this. You've written about this. I think you're doing a book on it. But the captain actually and others helped rig the antenna, which were blown apart because the first thing the Zionists wanted to do was destroy the antennas, so they couldn't inform Sixth Fleet that they were under attack by Israel. So it was kind of interesting. This is my beliefs anyway, and there might be different opinions about all these things, but the point is that the fact on the ground is, the empirical fact is, 34 Americans died from Jewish bombs and napalm. And they even tried literally to attack the fact there's the actual sworn statements that we've seen. I just read this the other day. In fact, even in Wikipedia, it's there. That they were even targeting the medics who were trying to help the burning and the damaged sailors and Marines and so forth on the deck of the ship who were suffering. They even tried to shoot them down and kill them, as well as trying to machine gun the life rafts. I mean, this is a case of Jewish terrorism against an American Navy ship. And it's just amazing to think about.
Unarmed. Unarmed ship.
Unarmed, yeah, right, exactly. Fundamentally, yes. And why? Well, there's a lot of, there's all kinds of hypotheses of why this happened. And I've read a lot about it, and you're a better authority than I am on it. But I believe that they thought they could get away with just sinking it very quickly, destroying the communication and getting away with it, and to think that this was not Israel but Egypt. In fact, they were kind of trying to say that you know, Egypt was the attacker, because there was, as you know, there was a war going on in the desert there at the same time, and they were going to try to blame it on Egypt to get America out. But also, there was also evidence that the Liberty was a spy ship, and they were intercepting all sorts of communications. And some of those communications, you're intercepting, by the way, were also being passed on to the Sixth Fleet. And they were learning about massive Jewish, Israeli war crimes against some of these Egyptian prisoners of war and so forth that they were reporting back that they'd intercepted. And they wanted to cover that up. So there's a lot of reasons why this was. But that's not the only terrorism. There's also the Levant affair, where they attacked the American retirement community. And they meant to kill a lot of people. And in fact, two of them, or three of them, died in the attack. In fact, one of the bombs blew up. And they always try to cover up everything on Wikipedia, of course, in Jewipedia. That's what it is. Under Walsh, who's actually a Jew and a self-identified Jew, Zionist, who also got a million-dollar award from Bar-Ilan University, who actually in the JTA articles quoted it, saying he's a dedicated Zionist Jew. And but anyway, so he's the guy that does Wikipedia. But even in that Wikipedia article, you had a lot of revelations in there. But the Levant affair, you had two Jews die in the attack. These were bombs, and there would have been a lot of people killed. They wanted a pretty good massacre, because that's what they do in these false flags. They want something that makes a difference. And they were trying to do that. They just didn't succeed because they screwed up and one of the bombs blew off prematurely. So they rounded up the Jewish team and executed a couple of them, by the way. But also they got all the testimony. All of them spilled the beans. They proved that all these people were Mossad. They had the data for it. They went to their places and with their assistants, because they wanted to cooperate, they got their papers, their Mossad papers and their identification things and their logins and all that stuff. So it was all proof that these were Israelis attacking American installations. And then basically, obviously, trying to blame Egypt for terrorism there. How do you get more treacherous than that, Dave? For folks listening, how do you get more treacherous than that?
Yeah, you can't. As a matter of fact, they are the master terrorists. Menachem Begin created the truck bomb.
Yeah.
So, absolutely.
They created the truck bomb. They also created something which is very deadly and cost many, many lives since, and that's the letter bomb. Menachem Begin, they were famous for the letter bomb. They also, not only were they, you know, this is what's ironic about, we live in this dystopian world. Israel is a state founded by terror. First, it was founded by infiltration of the British government. And this Jew by the name of Armory, this is all in Jewish Virtual Learner. You can read it on the internet.
Dave, it's quarter after. We got a whole lineup. So,
I'll hurry,
so let's.
You can read it in there, but I'll just finish it. So I'll just finish the one story. But so Armory was presented himself like a Britisher. He wasn't a Britisher. He was a Jew. He was a secret Jew. And he was the guy that wrote the Balfour Declaration. Of course, it came under the title of the Precipice of Balfour, the Balfour Declaration. And by the way, Balfour really said that Jews were a great danger to Britain. It's kind of an interesting story. But anyway, the Balfour Declaration came from infiltration. And then the Rothschilds literally went to the British government. And because the British were in a bad way, because the Germans had defeated the Russians, and that was what the Jews wanted to begin with. They wanted the Germans to defeat the Russians, to disgrace the Russian Tsar and the Christians, so they could overthrow the Russian government. All this is factual. Anyway, so they went to the British and they said, look, if you don't get America's got unlimited men they could put into this war, the Germans, their army is going to be doubled, because half their army was fighting the Russians. So now you need to get America into the war. And if you give us the right to go to Palestine. They didn't tell them all what they were going to do. In fact, in the Balfour Declaration, it says they'll respect the rights of the citizens, the indigenous people. If you let us go to Palestine, we'll get America into the war for you because we have Wilson under our thumb, which they did, by the way. In fact, there was a big, they were basically able to blackmail Wilson the same way that Epstein wanted to blackmail other goyim, right, to control them in the government. They wanted to blackmail the Clintons. They wanted to blackmail these powerful
Same Jews, different time.
Yes, just you're right. So we can go to the questions I'm ready for.
All right, buddy. Yeah, yeah, and of course, with the Liberty, yes, yeah, I have a great connection to it, and as soon as I'm able, we'll get out the revision of the book. But there's a lot of stuff to know about the Liberty.
And I'm going to start with a short request from the audience. I would really like, and a lot of you can ask, a lot of you have extremely good questions, and I always believed in my whole life that the way you get to the truth is by asking the right questions and good questions and then following up on questions to see where they go. And sometimes you got to go down those rabbit holes. But the questions that I would, one of the things I'd like to deal in today, if a lot of you are game, I would like to go into a lot of the hypocrisies and these bald-faced lies that they're using to try to justify this horrific massacre, tens of thousands of Palestinian men, women, and children, and the whole idea that Hamas is a terrorist organization, but somehow Israel isn't, and yet Hamas, only 2% of the people that died on October 7 were kids, were children. Yet every Jewish attack over the last...
All right, Dave, let's see what they got to say.
50% kids.
All right.
And another 20%.
Right, it's almost 20 after. So let's get moving.
So how is that not terrorism? How in the world can they get away with this?
Because they control the media.
I want to go into those kind of
politicians.
Questions and show hypocrisy.
Let's see if the listeners want to. And when we're done with the questions, if they don't, then we can elaborate on it.
Sure.
Okay, we got our first caller. What's your first name? Where are you calling from?
Hello, Dave. It's Richard here. How's it going?
I was going to say, but I looked at that and I said, "One must dominate life." It kind of looked feminine, you know. Sorry, Richard.
Well, no, that's not,
to me. I mean, not to me,
you can
a
really
little
be insulting, Dave. You got to really,
you know. Well, it's pink. Well, I mean, it's pink.
It
and,
is pink. Yes.
Oh, you know,
like
dominate
it's
life.
The you know? Aesthetic, I guess, that I was looking for. But no, I mean, my question.
I'm sorry,
using hyperbole to make a point.
My question does tie into what David Duke was hangling on there. People have spoken a lot about the escalation both in Palestine and also in the Ukraine. And I wanted to know, it's often talked about in our circles, of the Samson option. And, you know, Israel neither confirms nor denies that it has these nuclear weapons. But what is the likelihood and what would be the outcome in Duke's mind if Netanyahu decided to press that button? That's my question. Thank you very much.
I mean, it could very... it's almost an unthinkable prospect. Because if they use it... In fact, Benny Morris is one of their leading historians. And he's been advocating use of nuclear weapons against Iran for a long time. And Iran's doing so much better with their other technologies. And Hezbollah is certainly more powerful. Turkey now is kind of lining up against them as well. Egypt may be even forced into the fold. Jordan. And there is, that's one of the big dangers of a renegade state like Israel. Now, Israel's violated the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. And there's no reason in the world why Israel, because America understands they have nuclear weapons, because we demand by law that we can't give any money, any support to any country, even any sort of recognition or any sort of diplomatic approach to any country that who's developing nuclear weapons without joining the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and allowing inspections. But guess what? Israel gets away with it. Not only have they not joined the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and this is a major, quote, Western country we're supposed to respect, they actually would not join the Chemical Weapons Treaty, the Chemical Weapons Convention. They wouldn't join the Biological Weapons Convention. This is a rogue state. Any other state, like, say, North Korea, who would not do that, would be a rogue nation. Not only would they not get any money or any support, they would actually be sanctioned, and there would be rattlesnaking against them. And if there was a conflict, they'd go to war. Same thing, we're going to war basically against Russia today. Yet Palestine has been violated by Jewish Israel repeatedly. Israel has violated over 200 resolutions of the United Nations against settling in these areas. That's illegal under international law to get in a war, take people's land, and then ethnically cleanse the land, take over the land, or trying to replace the population. That is against international law. America has condemned that. Just like the Golan Heights. The Golan Heights, America's called for Israel to vacate the Golan Heights again and again and again. It's not their land. There were no Jews living there, but they're taking it. Now, if Israel does have nuclear weapons, and by the way, this shows you again the dystopian world we live in, because everybody in Washington knows Israel has nuclear weapons. The entire press recognizes that it has nuclear weapons, but somehow our government and the media gets away with allowing them to have these nuclear weapons in violation of everything we demand of every other nation on earth. But then again, Israel can demand all things. Now, if they end up nuking Iran, I don't know if China and Russia are going to stand by for this, because that's an ally of China and Russia. They do business with them. And they also understand that committing that kind of a nuclear attack against Iran would be horrific, would be a tremendous human rights crime. Now, America would certainly, if any other country was going to nuke another country or attack another country with nuclear weapons, America would devastate them. They would just make the country into a parking lot. But again, everything is off the table when it comes to Israel. So this is one of the biggest dangers to humanity. And even the war in Ukraine, by the way, Ukraine is losing this war terribly. Well, they lost it from the first day.
Dave, will Netanyahu use weapons?
What?
Will he use the weapons? Will Netanyahu exercise the Samson option?
The question was, is how dangerous is it? I think they may, but the Samson option is such, even that was revealed by another Jewish writer, by the way, Seymour Hersh. But if they use weapons, it could unlock a Pandora's box. It would put nuclear weapons on the table. And Russia, by the way, Russia is not going to go down either. And they are not.
Dave, we got to get the next call. So we just got
Ukraine.
We got to stick on Israel
to nuke them or put nuclear missiles on their border.
All right. Richard, we'll get you back in, buddy.
So there you go.
Okay, buddy, we'll get you back in. All right. Okay.
That answers the question for the most part.
Okay, we got. Yeah. All right, Jimmy, you got the floor, buddy.
Hey, Dave. Hi, Dr. Duke. Hey, when you were talking about truck bombs earlier, I read about a gas chamber truck that the Bolsheviks were using to go round up people, throw it in, and then they would make the exhaust go into the back of the box truck and knock them out before they, pulled up to a ditch to kill them. But that was a gas chamber truck, basically. And,
you're talking about the Bolsheviks, right?
Yeah, the Bolsheviks, right.
Okay, let's be clear. Don't say Russians, say Soviets.
Right, right, definitely.
This was the Jews, because the Soviet Union was effectively a Jewish state. And when I say that, I'm not just speaking out my ass. I'm speaking exactly what Winston Churchill, which is supposed to be the most admired man in history, in which even Martin Gilbert, the biographer of Winston Churchill, was Jewish and a Jewish Zionist, says, and he admits in there, about Winston Churchill's article called Zionism versus Communism, A Struggle for the Soul of the Jewish People, in which Churchill says, and Martin Gilbert doesn't refute this at all, he doesn't deny this, this is true. Churchill says that people like Leon Trotsky and these Jews who were head of the Soviet Union, that their designs were on taking over the whole world and ruling the world, for the Jews to rule the world through communism. That's literally the language that Churchill used in his article. So the fact is, the only reason they were pushing communism, and they had a lot of power at the end of the Second World War, and they were still massively influential throughout Europe and the world, and they were still pushing on this until one thing else happened, and that was the Russian people. But Stalin realized that the Jews were a danger to the Russian people, that they were not going to put Russia first, they were not going to put their people first, and so they started going against the Jewish power structure within the Communist Party, and they began to overthrow the Jews and pass laws against Zionism, making it a treasonable offense, which it should be in any country, because you're really putting another country's interests in war or whatever against the interests of your own people. So this is kind of amazing stuff. And once that happened, and once Jews realized it, they began to begin the Cold War. That's why they supported South Vietnam. South Vietnam was not, North Vietnam was not supported by the Chinese much. In fact, the North Vietnamese were afraid of China because China's always been a neighbor, very powerful neighbor that wanted to control things around them, obviously. But Russia was supporting South Vietnam. And any way they could weaken any Russian alliances, support, or whatever at the time, they saw it was a benefit because they were dedicated to overthrowing Russia and changing and destroying this new Russian Renaissance, because they knew, by the way, the Bolshevism, Jewish Bolshevism, was not going to last long with the Jews being removed from the positions of power they had. They even talked about in the Duma. I've been in the Duma many times myself, by the way. My books were sold in the Duma, by the way, when I lived in Russia. And I've been in the Duma many
Very times. Cool.
And, yeah. and the Duma, it was actually had speeches about the mass murders of millions of Christians. And of course, the Russians took back over. They legalized the Christian church again, supported the Christian church. And then after the Russians overthrew communism, took down the hammer and sickle, absolutely freed all of Eastern Europe, ultimately allowed East Germany to be united again with West Germany, without German unification. The deal was that, okay, we're not communist anymore. We just simply want to trade with you. We're just a traditional now Western Christian country. So let's not have all these weapons. Let's not have all this danger of atomic war. Let's make peace and have prosperity. Let's be friends. There's no reason we shouldn't be friends. We're not communists. And they let all these Eastern European countries go. But how did the Jews respond? Well, the Jews responded by steadily moving NATO to the east and threatening and trying to destroy Russia. And that's still going on. Then, this is the next part of the story. So then the Russians actually overthrow the communists, but the Jews wheedle their way in. They corrupt the Yeltsin administration. They bring the Russian, these Jewish oligarchs into Russia. They steal 50% of the resources of the country. They cause massive starvation, hunger, and destruction in Russia. I mean, we're talking about horrible conditions, right? And Putin comes in. He pretends like he's a friend of Berezovsky and Khodorkovsky and all these Jewish oligarchs, Kaczynski. But then when he gets in, he says, time's up, buddies. You know, either you're going to support Russia and Russian interests. If you steal anything, if you hurt anything, if you go against the interests of the Russian people, we're going to put you in, you know, in the gulag. We're going to put you in jail. And from those days on, Russia became an enemy because Putin was now on the side of Russian Christians and against Jewish power. Now, did he get rid of all the Jews? He didn't. He should have gotten rid of more of the Jews, but he did get rid of the biggest, most powerful Jews. Like Berezovsky was considered the most powerful. Kaczynski was powerful. Khodorkovsky was another one. Yeah, this is a Jewish mob. He did get rid of them, but he was afraid to go too openly against the Jews, even though the Jews knew what he was doing, because I mean, he even passed a law making Zionism basically a capital offense in the country. But Jews knew that he was going against them. But he didn't want to be too overt about it because he knows the power the Jews have in Hollywood. He knows that the people equate, you know, going against Jewish power with Nazism or mass murder or gas chambers and propaganda. And Jews would be hyped up to an incredibly insane level and could very much go to war. And he didn't want to see a war in Europe. And he's tried to avoid that war. But at the same time, I think the time has come actually for Putin to come out against Jews. He has done that subtly in a lot of ways. He came out against what they call cosmopolitanism, and he's talked about this, and he's really gone against the oligarchs to where there was a one time they totally controlled the high levels of the government and these oligarchs. And now there's only about 11, or actually it's about 8 left, and they're dwindling every day of these rich oligarchs out of like 400 oligarchs, which are all now ostensibly Christian Russians, except for a very tiny number of Jews, which also have to toe the line. But still, it's still a danger, I think, to Putin. And some of these Jews actually kind of came out and tried to undermine the Ukraine policy. So, and don't forget Trump, too. I mean, one of the most disgusting things I've seen in my life is here's Trump, you know, actually right now licking the dirty feet of these Jewish Zionists and Jewish oligarchs who are trying to destroy him, lock him up in prison. He's got Cohen, his Judas, Jew. All the people around the impeachment were Jews. All the people around the media, which were hyping shice on Trump every day, the most sick, evil attacks on Trump, who right now putting with these court cases, trying to lock him up for years. And here's Trump saying, oh, yeah, we're going to go stronger for Israel. We got to send them, you know, Biden's letting Israel down. No. A lot of us voted, and I'm sure that you were one of those, Dave, and the people did vote that are listening for Trump. We voted because of his anti-war stance. We voted because he said he was not going to get in these wars. He was acting like he was against the neocon wars. He talked, even in the debates, first one that did, it's one reason why we liked him, was he talked about how the Iraq war was a terrible war based on lies that cost us trillions of dollars, right? And was not in the interest of the United States nor in our soldiers, and how we should disband NATO. And now he's singing the entire Jewish supremacist song, and I'm getting so disgusting. We'll have to wait and see. Sometimes there's a pragmatic vote that needs to be taken in some cases, but right now I could not pull the lever for Donald Trump for president. I just could not do it. It would just be so disgusting to me. And there's nothing more pathetic. Can you imagine, folks? I mean, if anybody's ever seen an animal, and I've seen this a few times, when I was a kid, one time I saw a horse who was doing the carriage rides in the French Quarter. One of these black handlers was kind of beating this horse. It was disgusting. I wrote about my awakening when I ran to this went to this carnival on the way to the Taj Mahal, and they were torturing, basically, and making this bear perform, who was emaciated and suffering and everything. And I was about ready to go, you know, attack the guy, even though that might have been a big mistake for me in my life at that time. But I was getting ready to, and the British guy that I was with said, yeah, hold it down, you're in another country, you know. They could easily put you away forever. But I did make my voice, and the guy kind of cowered a little bit and stopped. But the point is that there's nothing worse than torturing an animal. And I've seen cases when a animal trainer was beating a dog or beating an animal, an ape or whatever, and then that animal licking the hands or the feet or whatever of the creature that was beating them. There's nothing more sad nothing more disgusting than to see that. But to see a human being like Donald Trump do that, like right now in terms of this Gaza, horrendous stuff, It's so shocking that it just is almost like a complete deal breaker for me on any support for anything Trump does. I just can't stand it.
You know, I'm with you on that. And, you know, but what do you think about the leftists? Could we get any of them to be on our side and be on a, you know, like something agreeable with the right and the left that is just about the Jew power and benefit from that, you think? Because, I mean, you know, they don't trust us. We don't trust them, the liberals. But do you think it's possible that we could pull together on that?
Well, I think we can, actually. Mm-hmm. And I think that people all over the world are learning that everything I wrote about for years, they're even using the same terms I did, Jewish supremacy. The Jews are the ultimate true racist monster murderers and genociders in the world. They are exactly what they claim the Germans were. except worse. They're cartoon Nazis. They're the vision that they make in Hollywood through their Hollywood movies, where they can say anything they want. All, you know, these are script written movies, and they can make Germans to appear any way they want. They are exactly what they describe the Germans are. There is a threat of Nazism in this world, but it's not German Nazism. It's certainly not even German National Socialism, what it really was in Germany, which was a pro-Christian country, was a decent country, right? But this is absolutely a real Jewish Nazism, so to speak. These are Jews who, unlike the Germans, are really desirous of conquering the world, which they always have been through Judaism and through their communism and these other plots that they've had. And that's the reality of life in this world. And people, this is inescapable fact when you just start examining the facts and these questions. Like today, I'd love to talk, if you ever get a chance, to some people about, let's just look at all the lies. Let's look at the lies about the hostages. The real hostages have been the Palestinians.
Dave, we got to move to the next call. We'll get to that when we don't have any calls.
200,000 Palestinians have been locked up and literally tortured in Israeli dungeons and prisons. And they're locked up without any due process. They're locked up by military institutions. Many of them are held without charge for decades. They're tortured. It's the horrible thing. There's a big United Nations report recently about this. So we don't talk about this, and yet they keep talking
all right,
about
Dave, we got to get
hostages
to the next
that Hamas has. Israel's got 10,000 right. hostages right now, right. innocent Palestinians, that they're
right.
torturing.
Fuck the Jews. Jimmy, we'll get you back in, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, by the way, Dave,
Jim, all right,
I've got a good friend
yeah, Dave.
Who just texted me, and I talked to somebody renowned a little earlier, was with him, and hopefully I'm going to do an interview eventually with him. I can't say who it is right now, but I wanted right. to tell them how they could log into the show and maybe ask a question or two if they wanted to, how they could listen to the show the most easiest sure. way.
Just go to Speak Free Radio.
Okay, so I'm just going to say right here, just go to Speak Free Radio.
Yeah, go ahead.
And
.com.
And then what?
And then you click on the call and chat. Click on the call and chat tab.
Okay, click on the call and chat.
Call ampersand chat.
Call
and chat.
Ampersand
and then just click.
Chat.
And then just click on the.
Chat.
Yeah, click on the show icon.
And click on chat. The show icon. And then if they want to, sign in.
And that's it. And they're in the studio.
They can even ask questions.
That's it. They don't have to sign in or anything. Exactly.
I love them to do that. So, cool.
Sure.
All right.
Of course.
Right. Sounds good.
All right. We got your cousin Vinny, Dave.
All right, great.
He's doing something there. He's making a lot of noise.
I'm going to talk to one of my friends real quick. So let me say this, take it easy. I'm going to tell them how to do that right now with you. It's also
okay.
for the audience. They can tell their friends that. So let me see if we can
exactly.
Let me see if I reach that.
Hold on, Vinny.
Compromising. I'm not going to compromise them in any way. Let's see what I can do.
Take your time, Dave.
Hey, buddy. Listen, I'm on air now. I sent you a chat, you know, a text, and I tell you how to get on the show. I'd love for y'all to listen, and if y'all want to make a comment or question, I would love to get a question from either of you. And it's fine to use pseudonyms or whatever you like on the show. I just wanted to let you know that.
Okay, I'll look at you.
Take care. Bye.
All right. Bye.
Okay, I did that.
Okay.
Thanks for letting me do that.
All right. Of course. Vinny, go ahead, buddy.
Hello, David. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Vinny.
I want to talk about this this primary we had here this week with John Hostetler. He lost. He got only 19.5% of the vote. The man who won got 38.5% of the vote. But what's amazing is that AIPAC, through their project for this year called the United Democracy Project and the Republican Jewish Coalition, spent a total of $5.5 million to $6 million on the Mark Messner campaign. Uh-huh. And Hostetler had you know, he's very well known within paleo conservative candidates because he's like one of the last of the paleo cons. He had under $500,000. But I just, you know, I gave John Hostetler $100 and I thought like it was incredibly well spent money because.
Oh, yeah, 20%. He got 19.6%, I think, of the vote, which is great.
But he created so much panic among the Jew for Jew media had every single Jew for Jew media publication had an article and talked about this. The New York Times, all the major networks, the Washington Post, they were all, you know, oh my gosh, this guy back in 2006 was talking about the Israel lobby. And, you know, he's Hostetler is famous for a comment he made. He was being attacked by Abe Foxman and he called the ADL the anti-defamation of Leo Frank, which was hilarious. And it got a lot of, you know, a lot of comments on Facebook. So, you know, he's kind of he's a really, really good man. And I was really, really happy with what he did. And, I think the way the Jews are going overboard, they're spending all this money attacking, like, he's the only Republican that I know that they're attacking because he's the last of the paleo cons. But all of these Democrats that they're attacking, they're having to change their strategy because the public is catching on to this Gaza genocide. And instead of attacking the Democrats on not supporting Israel, they're having to roll out different ads because their campaign isn't working. So they're having to attack. We need to get the word out that the United Democracy Project is AIPAC, and that's AIPAC money. And if people know that, if people are against this Gaza genocide, the candidate that's taking the AIPAC money, we could end up being cursed. And they're having to change their strategy and attack the Democratic candidates on, you know, all bread and butter, you know, stuff like, you know, the bad constituency service, missing votes, all that kind of, you know, relatively bland stuff because the Israel stuff won't stick to them. And I think the Republicans, the more they get involved in this Israel stuff, it's going to come back and bite them in the ass.
Well, it's going to. And let me tell you something, too. It's inescapable for people on the right and the left once they begin learning the bolts and nuts of, boy, they talk about nuts, the bolts and nuts of Jewish supremacy and Jewish supremacism and racism. And one of the good examples you gave me was the attack that Hostetler did on the ADL as the defender of Leo Frank. Now, Leo Frank was a Jewish pencil manufacturer, rich Jew in Marietta, or not Marietta, but in Georgia. And one of his employees was a Marietta girl, Mary Fagan. And she was raped and murdered by Frank. Evidence was overwhelming in it. And then he conspired to frame a black challenge guy, that guy with a very low IQ, and claim to try to blame the black, thinking that, well, these are white racists, and they're gonna jump on this thing, and they're gonna get this this poor black guy charged with this murder, and because of the racism and so forth. It didn't work out for him. The evidence was overwhelming. And in fact, even one of the Jews on the jury voted that Frank was guilty, or two of them. I don't remember the details on that, but I know at least one did. And so this is kind of illustrates the whole idea. The ADL and Jewish power masqueraded like they were friends of the proletariat in Russia, like they were friends of the proletariat all over the world, like they were friends of the South Africans. All they did by the overthrow of the South African government and apartheid, which was actually trying to help blacks develop their own nations, their own self-determination, their own democracy, and South Africans are trying to help them with more hospitals, more schools, higher education, and so forth. That was the intentional purposes of the country. But by supporting the ANC, which was run by Jews, Joe Slovo, who was a communist Jewish revolutionary, and they actually caused the murder of tens of thousands of Boer farmers, their wives, their children. I mean, it's just it's a horrible story, but literally 30, 40,000 Boers were murdered, along with many other whites in the country, because of the racial hate that they produced. and they acted like, boy, they're going to liberate the blacks. But it really wasn't about that at all. It was about Jewish power, about establishing a kind of communist state. They were open communists. I got pictures of Nelson Mandela. Even the American government said he was a communist revolutionary terrorist, by the way. And also what they wanted was Jewish control of South Africa by overthrowing the Boer Christians of the country. And guess what else they wanted? They wanted control over the vast diamond and gold resources. And people would say, well, why would they support then a black ruled government? Well, because the Boer Christians were decent people, and they would allow workers to organize for their rights for a decent pay and safe working conditions and a decent wage that their families could live on. But what they wanted to do was have the mines out of the Boers' hands as much as they could and put into the hands of the Oppenheimers. And so therefore, then the Jewish elite, because that's what the Jews do, they take their money and their big money from whatever they make it in, whether it be banking or whether it be, you know, usury, all the other things that they do, they combine it together and they use that money to finance Jewish causes. So this was not about the freedom of South Africa. And right now, South Africa, since the destruction of apartheid, of whatever the white state was. And by the way, the whites were willing to settle for a small part of South Africa, and blacks would rule their parts of South Africa. So right now, South Africa, including the life that's being bequeathed to blacks of South Africa, is disastrous. These people, their hospitals are breaking down. Their schools are disintegrating. The crimes and the corruption are just incredibly horrible. The lives of people. I can show you many tapes of black people, even in politics, and even other people, saying we were a hell of a lot better off under apartheid. So this is the same kind of process. So I think the whole Leo Frank thing, which you brought up, which is a very important point. This is the great thing about the show, is it brings a lot of history out there. That's I love to put my history hat on. So Frank was criminally accusing a black man unfairly for this murder that he committed, like so many other Jews have. When you look at the history of Jews with white slavery, and look at the history of Jews with sexual crimes and so forth. And he was trying to blame an innocent black person. And the interesting thing is, you know, he was guilty. Now, this is the foundation of the ADL. So what is the ADL? It was an organization founded in great part with Jewish money, because he was trying to save a Jewish man, a murderer of a beautiful little Christian girl, a beautiful Christian girl who was trying to blame a black person unfairly. I mean, you can't make these things up. And that's kind of the story of communism, too, right? So they told the people of Russia, you got to overthrow these, you know, these capitalists and these aristocrats. They're suppressing you and everything. But the worst suppression and the worst mass murder and everything was certainly done by the Jewish Bolsheviks. And Churchill himself, like I said, writes about this so unequivocally. The funny thing is in Churchill is that he was kind of being controlled by the Jews in a way, because what the Jews were saying is everybody knows that communism was Jewish. In effect, the Jewish Secret Service and the Jewish International Intelligence put out a big report to America and the whole world how communism was an international movement, quote, controlled by Jews. Everybody knew that. So he made the argument in his paper that the Jews are being torn between communism and Zionism, which is true. These are two significant things. But these were not Jewish movements on opposite ends of the poles. It was often Jews who were both Zionists and communists who led. In fact, the Communist Party at the time when Israel was founded was the first nation to recognize it, along with the United States. And the fact that was what happened then. But so what really happened over the years is that what we call communism, he was saying that Zionism is a good thing. Yet Zionism is not a good thing. In fact, it was the leading capitalist Jews like Mr. Schiff of the Konrad Loeb Company, right? One of the biggest Wall Street richest people on earth. He was the biggest financier of communism. He was also one of the biggest financiers of international Zionism. used to put millions of dollars into the pockets of Leon Trotsky, real name Lev Bronstein, who became head of the Red Army that killed millions of Christians. So the Churchill himself became an asset of the Rothschilds. This is all a fact. And he promoted all those things, including the greatest disaster that ever faced this world. More people were killed in the Second World War than all the wars in the history of the earth since the beginning of time. More people were killed in that crazy, stupid war, which could have been avoided with diplomacy, could have been avoided with fairness, but it wasn't. It wasn't because Jews, like the Daily Express in Britain, had a big headline, Judea declares war in Germany. I told you on this program many times about the book by Theodore Kaufman, a Zionist Jew, who actually did a book called Germany Must Perish. And the subtitle was a plan for the total eradication from the earth of the German nation and all of her people. That's 80 million Germans. And the New York Times is a Jewish publication, just as murderous as they are about everything else. It was a Jewish publication, was pro-communist, and it was pro-Zionist, and pro the Iraq war, and pro, there's never been a war the New York Times said. Like, they had to apologize for some of their pro-Vietnam stuff. They had to apologize for the lies they published about Iraq and weapons of mass destruction. These were all Jewish wars. And so everybody's beginning to learn that ultimate racist hatred and racist murder, our enslavement, our abuse, oppression, is bad. I don't want to be a white supremacist. I want to be a white person who loves his people, want to preserve it, his traditions, his heritage, just like all people in the world do, whether Muslims do it, or Arabs do it, or Indians do it, or South Americans want to, or Chinese want to do it. I believe in freedom, right? But the Jews are the ultimate supremacists in the world. Judaism itself is a racial supremacist ideology that makes the racial values of Hitler and Germany look very, very moderate in comparison. So that's the facts. And it's so interesting. And by the way, one last word, the NAACP, to show you the duplicity of these Jews, the NAACP was set up by 11 Jewish communists and one black communist named W. Du Bois. But even W. Du Bois, who was considered one of the most intellectual and brilliant blacks, he later had a fight with the Jews running the NAACP, which controlled the finances of the organization, controlled the leadership of the organization. It had Jewish presidents during its entire history up to 1970, believe it or not. There was never a black head of the NAACP until 1974, I think it was. Can you imagine that? The National Association for the Advancement of Colored People never had a black president. They had a Jewish president all that time. And he separated from them because he realized that the Jews weren't working for the benefit of black people or the strengthening of the black community or black business and black education. No, he realized that they were just trying to use black people. They wanted black people to remain a very struggling proletariat. And the more they could destroy the black family, the more they could lessen black economics, the more they can motivate them to, like a revolutionary precept, to use blacks kind of like a revolutionary proletariat against the whites, and they could use black voting as a way to get Jews into power and get true people with the interest of the 98% non-Jewish population of the country. Because when they got rid of the white people, they got rid of the people in terms of the voting power. They got rid of the people who wanted to put America first. And these are people who want to put all the people of America first. They wanted to be able to control the elections by controlling these wounded minorities and by weaponizing them to put in Jewish power. And this is what I say to the leftists out there all over the world who might be listening to this program right now. I hope there's thousands of them listening to the show. Send it to your friends all over the world, by the way. If you're Arab, if you're Christian, if you're whatever you are, the Chinese, whatever, share this program, because you've got to understand, you've got to realize the truth. And the truth is that the most racist force in the world, the reason why the Palestinians are being mass murdered and tortured, the reason why they're never talking about the Jewish hostages, the 200,000 hostages the Jews have taken into their prisons without any real legal course of action, without any real habeas corpus, like we've also gotten rid of in the United States for a great part when we call somebody a terrorist. They just put people in jail, keep them in jail, torture them, rape their kids, everything else. And by having these hostages, they control them and they control all their families and all their friends, because if they even talk about what their kids are going through, or their parents are going through, or their brothers and sisters are going through, or their friends are going through, they know that those people are going to be tortured even worse in Israeli prisons. If the real hostages were not the 300 people or so taken by Hamas, it's the 200,000 Palestinians over the course of 60, 70 years who've been captured as hostages, tortured in the prisons, in the dungeons of Israel. And yet you never hear about this. They added 5,000 more hostages just since October 7. But all you hear about is 130 Israelis which were taken hostages. To hell with the 10,000 Palestinian hostages. That's how the media does it. And this shows you again the complete bias and the complete control of the racist Jews who control our international media and governments. Now, you got me going in that time, folks.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Well,
I really enjoy exposing these people effectively, and I think that's why they so hate me, and I take that as an honor that they hate me.
Why you're still banned from Twitter. You're banned from Twitter. There's only like three people banned from Twitter.
I don't hate all of them. I do really despise those hypocrites and those murderers right now that what they're doing to Palestinians. I despise those who are murdering us and also inciting black people to hatred against whites. And there's many white victims. We according to the Justice Department, we had 560,000 whites. It's more than a half a million white people who are victims of black violence, murder, crime.
Dave, let's see if Vinny has something to say about, because we got to get to the top of the hour. Vinny, how did you like Dave's answer to your question?
It was great. And I just want to say the whole Hostetler affair reminded me of the old Norm MacDonald joke about a Marlon Brando having to grovel in front of the rabbi so he can go back to work. Jews don't run Hollywood, but he had to grovel in front of the rabbi so he can go back to work. And the guy who did win this primary, he gave an interview and he looked like he realized that he's completely under the control of AIPAC. He had an expression on his face and his tone of voice was like, I'm going to have to eat a steaming, buffalo chip sandwich and wash it down with a sour glass of milk for the next 2 years. I mean, it was hilarious.
Wow.
All right, Vinny. Thanks, buddy. We'll get you back in.
Thank you, Vinny.
Dave, we got to get to the top of the hour break.
Well, let's do that. And you know what? I'll come
back.
I'll come back as soon as the break's over. I'll come back with the exact quote of Marlon
Brando. All right. Brando, okay. All right.
Enjoy. Well, I'll give you an historical.
Cool. Dig that up. All right, folks, it is 7 o'clock Central Time, exactly, and you're listening to the Dave and Duke Call-In Show on speakfreeradio.com, and we have completed the first hour already, believe it or not, and we're going into the second, and Vinny just talked about Marlon Brando and how he said something about El Jew, and he had to go back and, I guess, do something. Dave's going to find it and tell us all about it. Dave, take your time.
I'll be happy to do that. Okay, so I was just texting the people who are on the road traveling, and so they had
to do their show.
So let's get to Brando here. It's pretty amazing stuff. Let me see if I can find it for you. I just had this.
Take your time, buddy.
There you go. I wrote about this in my awakening. This is what's so good about this show, is that we can go into all these different things I wouldn't get into except for we get questions, and that leads us down these roads, right? So let me tell you about, I'll give you a history lesson about Marlon Brando, arguably the most popular actor in America for decades, right? So Jewish power in this country is so powerful that they can make Craven, even the greatest Hollywood icons like Marlon Brando, is a prime example. In the early days of his acting career, Brando...
Dave, you mean imaginary Jewish power, right?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, because it's not real.
I love when you add those little comments. I do that.
I just want to make sure. All right.
Yeah.
For the audience. Okay. Yeah, right. It's imaginary.
So anyway, Brando wrote in his autobiography, right, that he was given an important role in a disgustingly pro-Zionist play called A Flag is Born, written by this avid Zionist named Ben Hecht and directed by Luther Adler, right? And this is what Brando notes in his book. I can read you this paragraph. It was essentially a place of political propaganda, piece of political propaganda advocating the creation of the State of Israel. Everyone in Flag of Born was Jewish except me. I did not know then that Jewish terrorists were indiscriminately killing Arabs. Well, the same old story that's going on right now, right? And making refugees out of them in order to take their land. The play, as well as my friendship with the Adlers, helped make me a zealous advocate for Israel, and later a kind of traveling salesman for it, right? Then Brando, he began, you know, giving propaganda speeches for the Zionist organizations, and it was all good for his career. He was getting more acting jobs. They were happy to promote him because he's now a spokesman for them, right? He even contributed money himself to the Zionist Irgun organizations, not realizing what was going on. He was absolutely disinformed, like most Americans are today. So he later learned the truth about Zionism, and he dramatically and courageously, I must say, changed his opinion. Now, he said in 1994, quote, I'll give you the quote by Brando, "I understand much more about the complexity of the situation than I did then. I sided with Jewish terrorists without acknowledging that they were killing innocent Palestinians in their effort to create the State of Israel. One of the strangest government policies is, this is amazing stuff, and it's so powerful. I'm glad we're spending a few moments on this. Anyway, one of the strangest policies, let me get this, where I am, is that largely because of the political influence of Jewish interests, our country has invested billions of dollars and many American lives to help Israel reclaim land that they never say their ancestors occupied 3,000 years ago, right? In many areas like that. And by the way, it's not just been we've given the equivalent now, by the way, the latest figures are about $1 million for every Israeli citizen of Israel. $1 million of America, if you parcel it out for every individual Jew. And if you think about the wars, the $3 trillion war of Iraq and Afghanistan, we have literally given the Jews millions and millions of dollars are spent on their money fighting their wars for them with our blood, too, on these terrible battles. This is shocking to say, but it's really true. Now, during an appearance on Larry King, I'm trying to give you the whole history. I've been on Larry King myself a few times. We have a lot in common there. Brando dared to say that Hollywood's run by Jews. It's owned by Jews. And I mean, it's amazing. Now, Brando contended that Jews are always depicted as humorous and kind and loving and generous, while they slander every other racial group. Quote, this is what he said, but are ever so careful to ensure that there's never any negative image of the kike. He used the word kike. Kike comes from actually the Jewish word, kikel, which is the circle that Jews would use when they couldn't speak English when they came to America, and it was a keikel, and because they didn't want to put down an X because they hated the Christian cross so much, they would put a circle. That's where the name kike comes from, by the way. Isn't that interesting? Anyway, so Jewish groups came down like a ton of bricks on Brando, saying in their press releases that they would see to it. Now, these powerless Jews, as you said a minute ago, Dave, that they had seen to it he would never work again. No one in the Jewish press dared to notice that the threats simply validated Brando's observation of their unchallenged media power. Brando became so intimidated and so humbled by all this, by the onslaught of hatred and threats against them, and destruction was levied against them, and evil, they spit on him in many cases, that he had to arrange an audience with a rabbi here at the Seaman Wiesenthal Center. And I got to say this to you folks, in probably the best acting job of his life, Brando cried and he got on his knees and kissed Rabbi Heer's hands, begging for forgiveness for offending the supreme Jewish gods of the Western world. He publicly pronounced his heresy against the new Jewish, you know, Brando publicly renounced his heresy against the new Jewish gods, and thus the Jewish high priest absolved him of his sins. Brando had become a good object lesson for famous Gentiles who might dare speak the truth about Jewish supremacism, and he has said nothing but positive things about Jews ever since. If someone wants to understand how Jewish supremacists maintain their almost complete media control, the Brando story is a great illustration. They do it both by the carrot and the stick. They reward the goyim who goes along with their evil, as they did Brando in his early career, but they're unmerciful to anyone who dares to even utter a word against them. And by the way, their mass murder of their victims and their involvement in these wars that kill millions and millions of people. This is the greatest crimes in the history of humanity, folks. Now, public figures who publicly oppose them have to be incredibly stupid or very magnificently brave. And I'm betting on, I had to make a decision in my life years ago, Dave, and all the people listening out there. You know, I had to make a decision. Everybody wants to be a little bit wealthy. Everybody wants to be successful. Everybody wants to be loved. Everyone likes to have the idea of being, you know, ahead of a big company or creativity or being recognized for their art or whatever they do. And I had to make a decision whether I wanted wealth and fame. I wanted it to be just, believe in justice, and be honest. And I made my decision. And even though I've suffered in many ways because of it, I've also had a great life because of it. And I've done things I would never have done. I've met great people, and it has never stopped me from having a great family, great children, and the few loves I had in my life, I probably wouldn't have had them, except for the fact that I was so outspoken and some people of the fairer sex, liked me and were attracted to me because of the courage I displayed. And that is attractive, I think, to a woman. So I say, if you really want to be successful in life, and you can still be successful, I think my life's been successful overall, is just tell the truth. And go for the justice and go for the truth. And if you do that, you really have a life you can be proud of. And isn't that the most important thing to you? Is that when you die, you can die not with regret and not with a feeling of the things you should have done. But when you die, you think about what you did that was right. And you can die at that point with a smile on your face and not with a tear in your eye. And I am so thankful for every great thing in my life. This has not stopped me from having great days. I've traveled a lot because of my work. I've skied mountains I could never skied. I've climbed mountains I could never climbed. I've met people, great people I would never know that I would ever meet because of the work that I've done for my people. And I would say that to any person ascribing or is famous in the world today. The truth is, yeah, the Jews will oppose you in some ways. They're going to oppose you anyway. They oppose Trump for the most part simply because he doesn't go along with their agenda. He doesn't even attack Jews. In fact, he praises Jews, but they attack the crap out of him. But here's the thing. You know, you can achieve great things, and there's going to be, and the world is turning now. And the truth is that those people who have the courage to stand up against Jewish power and Jewish genocide and Jewish mass murder and Jewish corruption and Jewish supremacism. Jewish Nazism is the best way to put it. People stand up against that are going to be, I believe, the most revered people in the world, the most honored people in the world. Those days are coming. The people that the Jews try to make us hate are going to be some of the most honored people in the world. So if you can actually, in the end, you can get both truth and justice and a little bit of recognition. And everybody likes to be loved. Everybody likes to be felt good about it. When I was a kid, I'd go to the war movies and stuff, and you'd be dreaming about being a hero and being courageous, maybe even dying for your comrades and being honored for that. I mean, that's what kids think about sometimes. And I do think, though, that there's going to be a time when it's going to be a badge of honor for anyone to stand up to these Jewish mass murderers. And it's not all Jews, but unless you Jews, by the way, and I'll say this, I make a plea to those Jews who are listening to this program right now, whether it's tape or live, that if you really are a decent Jew, if you're a decent human being, be a human being first. And a number of Jews are doing that. They're fighting the crimes. They're going, they're recognizing Jewish supremacism, Jewish racism, Jewish mass murder, Jewish torture, Jewish sexual crimes, the Jewish destruction they're wreaking against the beautiful Christian world, the art and literature, music, the families of millions of people. They're, you know, the people understand the Jews run the porn trade now. They understand that Jews have won white slavery and prostitution for centuries, and they brag about it in their books. They understand they were the masters of the slave trade globally, even back in the Middle Ages, according to the Encyclopedia Britannica. They're learning these things now. And it's not being hateful, not being, quote, anti-Semitic, to expose these facts and oppose the criminality. The truth is, I think it's much more evil to not expose these Jewish evils that are being committed in the name of the Jews, because if they continue to do these evils, all Jews will suffer terribly. And they have suffered. Innocent Jews have suffered along with the guilty Jews. And those Jews that don't stand up against the evil that Jews are doing, they themselves, and unfortunately, often their children are going to suffer, because that's what happens. You know, when people get in a war, if a country invades you, even though you got corrupt people at the top, when the country fights back against those invaders and those people have been conscripted in that country's armies that are dying, your sons and daughters, right? And you're having to fight against them. You know, when that happens, because you've allowed these monsters to come to power, you're gonna end up suffering in the end. So if a Jew really cares about life, not just of Jews, but of all people and all human beings, as I do, I believe in the life of all people in the world. I respect all races. I definitely want to preserve my own people, our own character, the beauty that we've represented, the art and literature, music, and the magnificence. The European people, yeah, they may have had slavery in some places in the world. So did the Aztecs. So did the Incas. So did Indian tribes enslave each other long before Columbus ever came. So did the Golden Horde. I mean, we keep going. So did the Muslims when they invaded Europe. They induced a bunch of slaves. So did the Corsairs in the Moorish kingdoms. They kidnapped Europeans by the millions and sold them into the slave markets of the Middle East. It's like, but the difference is Europeans changed the ethic of the world to oppose slavery and the idea of slavery. Well, the Jewish doctrine, the Jewish religion says you can keep slaves forever and you can pass them from your Jews one another, but you can't enslave your fellow people. You can commit loan sharking, which is known as a terrible crime, which is an addictive thing, which damages young people or other people, where people get locked into this usury and this interest that organized crime does, right? And that Jews have got to stop. That's what usury is. It's loan sharking, basically. It's criminal. And Maimonides said, a Jew cannot commit usury against a Gentile. That's what he called nesek, which means biting the flesh. And if you're a Jew and you really believe in human rights, you will oppose this kind of activity, and you will, and you will try to get your own people straightened out, because you've got to know about it if you're Jewish. Am I still connected?
Yeah, absolutely.
You had me going there.
I'm glad.
I was waxing maybe as eloquent as I've ever been in the show. I was
yeah, very I good. Very good. Yes, very good, yeah,
but
Dave.
That story of Marlon Brando is so evocative. It's so fascinating.
So important. So important. So important.
And I know.
I mean, it sums it up.
Yeah, I'm sure he had some regrets before he died that he caved in at the end.
Yeah, I wish somebody would just stand up to him and tell him to fuck off, you know?
Yep.
All right, let's bring in Richard. He's got another question for you,
I can't believe
Dave.
It. You were so mesmerized that you just let me go on and on until I was done.
Well, I kind of know what I'm doing.
You do. Thank you so much for letting me get that all out today.
I'm not going to interrupt the master when it's something as important as
this is amazing stuff. I mean, let me ask you this too, Dave. We can have a short, quick discussion.
Go ahead, Richard.
We can get Richard back in. I'd like to get Richard's take on all this. The incredible hypocrisies and the disinformation, the lies, the naked lies go on. Isn't it just shocking, even though we know about their power in media, we know about their power in social media, we know about their power in mainstream media, we know about their power in Hollywood. Isn't it unbelievable that we hear 1,000 times more about 130 Jewish hostages than the 10,000 men, women, and children who are in Israeli prisons where they're being raped, where they're being tortured, where they're putting these restraints on their arms and so forth. It cuts off the blood circulation. And then they get their arms on their hands amputated, often by people, not even doctors. This is all, it's all in the latest UN report on all this. It's all fact on massive scale. But you never hear about this in the media. We live in a world that we can hardly imagine. It's like we wake up into a nightmare. And I know it's very depressive for a lot of you to hear it. But we have to confront it. If we don't confront it, we're not human beings. We have no empathy. We have no love. We have no responsibility. Every human being has a responsibility to stand up for truth and to stand up for freedom. Not only just for ourselves, but certainly against any sort of criminal behavior or murderous behavior that's done in our name with our money. It's a terrible crime. What's going on by Israel financed by American money? Of course, it's financed by American money because Jews control the money. And Jews control the financing of American elections. And Jews control the media about who gets that good press, like we talked about with the recent election with Hostetler. I mean, all that's fact, folks. But isn't it amazing? Think about it. And if Richard's coming in, I'd love to hear your thoughts too as well. And Dave, your thoughts too. Just checking out the difference in the frequency of the media's talk about Jewish hostages and the stories about what they're going through by every Jewish hostage been released. None of them say they were raped. None of them say they were groped. None of them say they were treated badly. Most of them say even they were in terrible conditions in terms of being in tunnels and not having much food or whatever, because it's just like they got the same food they said as the people put them in. They were in 1,000 times better condition in those poor lost Palestinian children and souls than Israeli dungeons. And if you can't get emotional about these things and you can't feel these things in your heart and feel like you want to right this wrong, I would suggest that you're losing the right to really call yourself a human, because that's what a human being is a person that is not going to stand by. If you saw a little child being, say, strangled on the street, or hurt or beat by anybody, a little baby on somebody's lawn, you would have an absolute obligation to do whatever you do, even risk your own self, to try to save that child. Obviously, if you don't, then you've lost yourself. You will end up hating yourself, and your life will be shit. Because if you can't respect yourself and you can't understand human feelings and you can't understand suffering, if you can't put yourself in the shoes of that baby or the shoes of a parent who's that baby might be, right?
if that was your, or that was your wife that was being raped and murdered, or that parents or those grandparents, like those farmers where the 80-year-old men and women actually raped and tortured a husband, 80-year-old husband that lived with a 60-year marriage or 65-year marriage, and seeing his 80-year-old wife tortured and raped by these ANC people that were spurred on to do this and kill the Boer by these ANC Jews. If you can't want to try to stop that and realize this is a crime, the only reason that you don't realize it's a crime is because that's what they didn't tell you about. They tell you about a massacre at the Sharpsville police station where these Jewish inspired communists, ANC people, with guns and clubs and all, were going to go in and kill all the policemen, and they end up killing 60 of the demonstrators, right? They don't tell you about the 40,000 innocent people on the farms, which gave these blacks jobs and lives and medical care and treatment and tried to do something good for them, better than any other country of Africa, by far better. And even trying to bring them self-determination. They were murdered, tortured in their last moments of life. You got to understand, folks, this is not a game. This is not some sort of a mental exercise. It's not like rooting for a team on a football team, getting your team to win or something like that. This is about human life on a massive scale. You can't even imagine. You can imagine one single child suffering, but can you imagine 75 million people suffering? That's not even just the people. That's people who died in the Second World War. But another 75 to 100 million who suffered, who lost parents or lost their children in the war, lost their homes, their whole life's work, lost everything, lost their sight, lost their ability to walk. I got tapes right now. I just saw some tapes from Israel. And this was a very big production by Jews. And they were interviewing Jews that fought in the first revolution or the first takeover of Palestine. And they have a couple Jews there who are discussing their mass murder and rape of Palestinian women and little boys and girls. And they're discussing it. And you know what they're doing when they recount all this? They're laughing at, ha, 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 ha. Yeah. And they talk about the murdering of these children, right? And they're laughing about it. But you're not going to see those interviews on national news. You're not going to see any of those interviews even portrayed at all in a Hollywood film. Because Hollywood's controlled by Jews. And the last thing I want to say, and this is an important point I've been talking about my show every day. Watch my show, listen to my show, actually, at 10 a.m. every day, Central Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, and later in the evening in Europe. Listen to my show. I talk a lot this week about the horrific, the absolutely unbelievable crimes that have been committed and the reporting of this by papers like the New York Times and CNN and the Google control of the search engines and the Google control of Wikipedia and all these things, right? And I mentioned this earlier. This is such an important point. Why don't any of these critics of these lies that they know the New York Times puts out, like on the systematic rape of Jewish women, which didn't happen, or the 50 beheaded babies, or, you know, 40 beheaded babies, whatever. Why in the world do they make, why in the world are they telling these lies? Why are they able to get these lies out to millions of people in their broadcast media and their print media? Why is this able to be done? Well, do you think it might? I asked this to Dave, I asked this to Richard, and then I'll get off. But you think this might have something to do that Jews completely own the New York Times? Jewish communists and Jewish Zionists? That Jews own CNN, basically run it? That Jews control MSNBC? They control NBC? The Comcast Corporation does? They control ABC, which is Iger, who controls Disney, which transformed Disney from a pro-American, pro-Christian organization to God knows what. And they also control CBS with the Redstone family. I mean, you know, all these networks, all these newspapers, all these things, all these social media, why don't they come with a warning label? Careful. This publication is owned by radical Jews who support genocide of Israel, who support massive wars against countries that are innocent, even though they're presented as guilty, that use alleged crimes against them to justify mass murder and genocide against innocent people who did nothing to Jews. This is the reality of the world today, but it's a reality that we have to confront. And you really got me going tonight, folks. I think it's the
I'm best glad, Dave. Dave, you're in your best form right now.
Thank you so much. I'm glad I still got a brain after how old I am.
But, oh, you got a brain, damn it.
Is Richard there?
Yeah, but I have an answer to your question.
Oh, you do it first.
Because Jews are not human. That's why they can do all this stuff.
Well, you know what? I would rather say, I guess they could scream under the wire as a human in terms of they got hands and eyes and legs. But I can say this. I do believe evil is real in the world. And I know that a lot of people, especially academics, as I am, we're very reluctant to use a word like evil and talk about the devil or something. But sometimes I think of the great Martin Luther's great hymn, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God, where he says, we're still our ancient foe, doth seek to work us woe. His craft and power are great, and armed with cruel hate, on earth is not his equal. And Luther spent much of his life, even the last sermon he made, was warning the Christian people of the world and the rest of the whole world about the nature of these Jews and the nature of Judaism and the fact that it says the best of the Gentiles must be killed. It says that you can do loan sharking against Gentiles, but you can't do against Jews. That you can enslave Gentiles, that's great. The head of Israel's Sephardic rabbi, the top Sephardic rabbi and his son, he actually got up and said the only purpose of Gentiles on the whole planet Earth, talk about racism, talk about murderous intent or genocidal intent. He said, quote, if this was in a sermon to the whole country, public sermon, he said, the only purpose, and this is reported in the Jerusalem Post, it's on tape. He said, the only purpose of all Gentiles on Earth, which is 99.8% of the population of this Earth, the only purpose of going was to serve Jews. That the purpose of Goyim was to dig, to mine, to deceive, to reap, while the Jews are allowed to sit as affinity masters. That's the word for master in slavery. While Jewish affinity sit and eat. I mean, talk about dismissive. And then he goes on to say, and talk about a vile, racist attack on more than 99% of the world's population. He says, quote, does a Jew want his Gentile, slave, basically? Does he want his Gentile slave to live a long life? And he answers by saying, well, of course he does. Just like a Jew wants his donkey to live a long life so he can serve his master. This is what the chief Jewish religious titular kind of spiritual head of Judaism around the most quoted Jew in the world, the chief Sephardic rabbi, who also sets Israel's marriage policy, immigration policy, education policy, which segregates the schools, and which basically teaches every Jew how Gentiles are born evil. Well, I think that's a matter of projection. Maybe they're talking about themselves. I will not say that every Jew is born evil, but I can tell you this, that there is a lot of evil in the Jewish elite. And I can show their role in communism. I can show their role in the mass murderers in the world. I can show their role in the wars that have been the greatest killing fields in the history of the world. Wars that could have been avoided. Wars directly sponsored by them and caused by them. And the ironic thing is, it's not... a good example is this. They say it's a war between Israel and Hamas. It's not a war, folks. It's a slaughter. Gaza is a concentration camp. It's a prison. People can't even leave there. There's no place to even run. If you bomb even a country of a, you know, say city, saying somebody in Ukraine, people live in a city, they can run out to the country where they're relatively safe, right? They can get away from the bombing. They can find some place out in nature, in the woods, get protection. Gaza is a place the size of the LA airport. These people can't even run. They have no jets. They have no 2,000-pound bombs. They have nothing. They have none of this high tech. None of it. They don't have any tanks. Not a single tank. I mean, this is not a war. It's a genocide. It's not a war. It's mass slaughter. And anybody who can't see that, I realize that you've been programmed, and I realize you're only getting one side. But for God's sakes, please, folks, no matter who you are, left wing, right wing, I know I'm called a racist, but let me tell you something. I reject racism. In fact, I'm the last thing from a racist, because a racist is defined as someone who hates other people, wants to oppress them, exploit them, harm them, or enslave them. I'm totally opposed to those things. I believe every people has a right to be free and independent, but that's not what Jews believe. They believe they have the right not only to control Israel, but to control America, which they are controlling, to control Great Britain, to control France, to control Germany. They also don't like what Russia is doing, so they're now dedicated, like Mr. Kaufman's book, Germany Must Perish. They might as well write a book, you know, Russia Must Perish. Because I can show you a magazine called, it's done by the Council on Foreign Relations, right? And it's their magazine. And they literally propose in the article, these Jews, how that they're going to break Russia up in 36 different countries, little tiny countries. So these countries could never oppose their Jewish power and the power of the United States, which they control. They can never control them. And then it talks about how they can financially exploit these nations. They would steal it from the Russian people. I mean, it's just like Germany Must Perish. But this is 2024.
Yep. Same games. Same playbook.
Yeah, you really do have me going today, and I think I'm hopefully making sense for everybody listening.
Well, I'm glad, Dave.
This show. Guard this show with your life, babe. And
you know it, Dave. You know whether or not
they take out some of these excerpts and make special videos from it.
Absolutely. Whether or not you use the term, the word evil, yeah. I'm saying they're not human. So I don't think a human would do the things they do. Do you?
That's why I call my show Human Rights Radio.
Right. They're not human. Yeah, they're inhuman.
Human beings, you know, have a sense of humanity. And they know that torturing...
Exactly. They don't. They know. Therefore, they're not human.
They know that stealing somebody else's land, or their possessions, or their hard-earned work, or their lives, are subjecting them to slavery, is wrong. And that's the difference between Judaism, which endorses slavery, and the ideas of Jesus Christ. And that's why they hate Christianity so much, because Jesus Christ said the golden rule.
Absolutely.
We treat everybody else the same. And they changed. Jews believe that they were special, chosen of God because of their blood, because of their descent. The New Testament.
Dave, we got to get rich in it because we got other guys locked up.
I will. But the New Testament. All this
Dave, time, we got to get rich. Okay.
Okay, last sentence. The New Testament literally says, let's just finish with this. The New Testament said it's not the descent that makes you the chosen of God. It specifically says in Acts, it specifically says in the New Testament, quote, you know, it's the promise, it's the salvation that Jesus Christ, the chosen people of God, have become those who accept the grace and the message of love that Jesus Christ preached. That's the difference between Judaism and Christianity, and the difference between Jews and all the other religions in the world.
I still love
Judaism.
Human
is about ultimate Jewish power.
All right, Richard, go ahead, buddy.
Thank you very much. Well, I didn't want to interrupt your flow, Dave. I really did appreciate your talk, and I found it very incisive. It actually dovetails with my question that I've got for you, which is that there was a Englishman by the name of Jonathan Bowden who once said that the way that we can win is by making our position sexy, attractive, desirable. There's a lot of friends that I know that say that they are, you know, edgelords, as it were, and talking about things in a way which is dissident. Like there's content creators, as I'm sure you're aware, Adam Green, Ed Dutton, the Jolly Heretic, and they're almost disappointed if they don't make it into the Hope Not Hate or the ADL Roundup of the Week for the hate spot. And I think that is something which we see coming into fruition here. My question, though, concerns Rhodesia and South Africa in the sense that the kind of inversion of morality, which you were, I think, addressing in your earlier point, pitting blacks against whites, pitting Muslims against Christians, whereas actually the real thing is Jews, and people can really get behind that. I've seen protests, both left and the right, where they're uniting in their contempt for Biden. They're uniting in their hostility towards the Zionist entity.
Isn't that great? Isn't that great? What do you think of that?
It is great. It is great. And I guess, you know, when do you think that that kind of, what's the term for it, I guess, that litmus test will be passed, in the sense that when will there be enough people that in this great awakening do wake up, and what kind of change do you think will happen?
Well, it takes two things. It takes people really correcting the narrative, because Jews are the greatest spin masters of the world, right? They spin the story and they spin the narrative in a way to distort everything. And a perfect example of what's going on, I'm glad you brought the subject up, because it's really a critical issue, especially for more liberal viewers. And I have a lot of liberal supporters, or what's called liberal supporters. I've got supporters that are totally in favor of just total egalitarian and open our borders. But at the same time, they know the Jewish control over our societies are true racism and true devastation for everybody. At the same time, I'm trying to reach them and explain to them that the things that they're objecting to, with the mass murder, with the torture, with the genocide that's going on in the Middle East, and the genocides committed by Jewish communists. And a lot of these people are, in fact, they have an enamoring of communism, which I understand why, because communism was preached to the world, or the world was told, these Jews told the people of the world that communism was communism, a communal idea that people were given fairness and equality and opportunity, and they had a government that cared about their health and cared about their education and would work hard for that. But communism, that was a con. Communism, that was the message they used to gain control over Russia and basically steal the country. And it was controlled. It's just, it was the perfect example of that. I can give an example of that. You know, everybody's got Arm and Hammer baking soda at home, right? And Arm and Hammer, his name is Arm and Hammer, was this Jewish capitalist, very, very rich. He was, because he was a Jew, he was given special trade rights and so forth with the Soviet Union and his fellow Jews, right? So he made lots and lots and lots of money. And by the way, he supported the communist cause repeatedly. When the communists wanted more money, the most productive farmland in all of Europe and in the world was Ukraine. And the Ukrainians were very industrious people, a lot of German people. There were also Germans or Huguenots. There were all kinds of different people. But, you know, it was a huge number of Germans in Ukraine. There were other ethnic groups. And they had the most productive farms and the best soil and everything. And they had two problems with Ukraine. They were Christian. And they vastly outnumbered the Jews. And the Jews hated them. Because these Ukrainians, their value system and their honor was to the Cossacks. And the Cossacks were Ukrainian patriots. They were fighting for the freedom of Ukrainians. And for years, and for actually centuries, they fought against these rapacious Jews, these Ashkenazi Jews, who absolutely ran the brothels, the white slavery, which is every society understands. They ran the liquor, which destroyed so many lives and that kind of living, the gambling that destroyed so many lives in Ukraine, and especially the loan sharking. Because when you're in a farm and you have a bad crop one year or you have a pestilence one year or something like that, sometimes you've got to borrow money to get the seeds to live the next year. And the Jewish moneylenders, the actual loan sharkers, knew that the peasants were not as knowledgeable about the economics as they were, and they would deceive them. And they say, well, we'll lend you the money. But in a way, they always had those little caveats in the contract and so forth. And what happened was the Jews would get control of everything. That's why the Tsar issued the May Laws. You've all heard of the May Laws, right? I hope you have. Again,
I have, yeah.
History is so critical for all this. And in my book, I go in depth with May Laws. And the May Laws were issued by the Tsar to protect the serfs. So as the serfs of Russia, which are kind of like slaves in a sense, they weren't slaves, though, but they were tied to the land. For centuries, the aristocracy considered the people that were tied to their land with them like family. And they made sure that they'd protect them. They protected them from the moneylenders who might come in to get them. They protected them from the people trying to get them in gambling or to loan them money or to get them into white slavery or to corrupt them in some way. They protected them. But when they became freed and when they became out of control of the aristocrats, then the Jews just swept in and exploited them. They got them into their... They got them into their watering stations, you know, their liquor houses and gambling dens and prostitution, every sort of corruption. They even tried to corrupt, and they did corrupt much of the aristocracy. And the May Laws were saying that we have to protect the peasants from these exploiters, from these criminals. Now, Jews have always, even from the Middle East times, been associated with criminality and illegality and organized crime. They've always been that way. Luther wrote a whole book called the Jewish Lexicon, and he proved that almost all the words in Germany where he lived, and in fact, the entire Mediterranean region, the Jews used to describe certain criminal behaviors like white slavery, moving stolen goods, loan sharking, just many other things, that the words they used all had Hebrew origins, exposing the Jewish issue of that. I've got an example of that in the New York Times of the article I read just the other day. My mind still seems to be working today. And it was written by Brett Stevens, and it's called A Modest Proposal Ban All Jews. And in the article, he mentions a couple of things. He mentions that Jews, when he grew up, his own relatives, right, that he said almost every Jew has an Uncle Bern in their family who was supporting the murderous regimes of the Bolsheviks. Yeah, but he seems such a nice man. Why would he support such a murderous museum? But he talks about how that the biggest influence, the biggest activity of the Jews in America that fled into America, and by the way, their way was made open by the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, which supported this massive arrival of millions of Jews. Now, the millions of Jews came into America from Russia, fleeing Russians who were fighting them because they were communists trying to terrorize and take over the country for the Jews. They came into America, and they were still Bolsheviks and Marxists. He talks about this in the New York Times article. And then he says, basically, he mentions this. And he also mentions the fact that one of the heads of the police in New York were talking about the fact that Jews, which were a small percent of the population, were the mass, were the most guilty for criminal behaviors in New York City. And he talks about that. He tries to refute that a little bit, but he talks about it. And then he goes on to say, but thank God for the Jews, because the Jews came in and transformed all of America. And they made us a nice country. And they let in these refugees. And yeah, they let in the Jews that took over America, by the way. And what David Brooks describes in the New York Times as, quote, the Jewish takeover of America and exploitation. Now, the first and biggest criminal organization in the United States of America, the biggest one in the early 20th century when these empires arose, was called Murder Incorporated. Thomas Dewey, famous American politician, he became famous, almost got to the presidency, but because he broke the back of Murder Incorporated. Murder Incorporated was a 99% Jewish organization. You ought to read the list of the people behind it. Meyer Lansky, the most famous gangster of the 20th century. It wasn't Al Capone, by the way. It was Meyer Lansky, by the way, who gave millions, if not billions, of dollars to Israel. And this was a murder-for-hire organization that would kill people by the hundreds, if not thousands, for big money. Talk about corrupt and drugs and white slavery and all the rest. So this is why there's been opposition to Jews. So if you want to understand anti-Semitism, it's like Israel Shahak said, which I read as a young man, you cannot fight anti-Semitism unless you fight Jewish supremacism, Jewish exploitation, Jewish criminality, Jewish power. He said, quote, anti-Semitism and anti-Gentilism can only be fought simultaneously. Boy, is that not true? If you want to end anti-Semitism, and of course anti-Semitism today is opposing Jewish mass murder of Palestinians and Jewish, you know, and Jewish control and leading America into all these wars and horrible wars that hurt Americans and cost us trillions of dollars and hurt these other countries and millions of innocent children. Like the 500,000 children that Madeleine Albright said were worth it. That was a good thing that America did that. We caused 500,000 children to die. Many of them suffocated in their own fluids because they couldn't get antibiotics while their parents had to watch them die or die from starvation in this desert kingdom called Iraq because of our sanctions, which we knew about. She was asked on 60 Minutes before the whole country, there's 500,000 children that have died in Iraq by our American policy. And they ask her, do you think that's more than Nagasaki and Hiroshima? Do you think that's worth it for America to do this? And Mal Albright, our Jewish Secretary of State and big Zionist, says, yes. It's a difficult question, she said. But yes, we think it's worth it. Well, the people that think it's worth it to kill 500,000 children because you don't like the leader of a country, based on lies of weapons of mass destruction, which he didn't even have because he was an enemy of Israel, and to get American blood to be shed and American trillions of dollars to be spent in wars and probably a million people in Iraq, innocent people in Iraq, and those soldiers of Saddam, every country's got soldiers. We would feel for every soldier that died who was an American in a war. And we would rue the day and we would condemn any action of our government to put our boys in harm's way, where they can lose their eyes or lose their gonads, their reproductive abilities, lose their brains, lose their bodies, lose their ability to walk, be disfigured for any government that put us in these battles for lies is evil. This is the reality of the world. This is why, you know, I like this law because you know what? This law tells us and it proves to us that anti-Semitism is opposing Jewish criminality. It's opposing Jewish mass murder. It's opposing Jewish supremacy. It's opposing Jewish wars that have killed millions. It's opposing Jewish communism, and it's also opposing Jewish Zionism. It's opposing the active efforts of them to destroy the European people. And again, I will emphasize, and it's probably one of my last comments for the night, I will emphasize the fact, and this is something we have to understand and we have to address, okay? The crimes that Israel's committed against the Palestinians and the crimes of the huge crime of the Second World War and the crimes of the First World War, which is intentionally trying to weaken and defeat the Tsar and make way for communism, or getting America into the war with the Rothschilds and the Jewish influence over Wilson, which they call the first Jewish president. These crimes and the massive deaths that came from these crimes would not have been possible without the Jewish demonization of Europeans and telling people and making Europeans hate themselves and support the Jews when the truth is that if America was run by Europeans in the interest of European values, that we wouldn't have had these wars. We wouldn't have been having Germans killing Russians and Germans killing Frenchmen and Britishers and British and German. We wouldn't have had a policy by Great Britain and the United States, because we followed it with our bombers too, a policy that was intended to mass murder German babies and their mothers and the overwhelmingly women and children of the cities while the men were fighting the war, of the cities of Germany, which were bombed and created with firebombs. That was the American policy during the war. And we have the nerve to talk about German war crimes? We had 11 million Germans ethnically cleansed from their ancient homelands in the middle of winter, and half of the women raped by Soviets at the urging of Ilya Ehrenberg and these Jewish commissars of the Communist Party in Russia, saying, rape the German women, rip the babies out of their bellies. And this was a great war crime. And those people were innocent, as much as Americans were innocent that died in the war, as much as the British were innocent. And yet we had a policy of doing these things. This is like the original sin. You want to talk about the destruction of this world? You can look right to the First World War and then the Second World. The First World War brought about the rise of communism and takeover of Russia, rise of Bolshevism. That, in turn, helped create the Second World War and the destruction of Germany. It created the Second World War. And the Second World War was nothing more than the Jews basically taking over the world, because by taking over the United States, which emerged as the only superpower, only power with even nuclear weapons, they were basically able to dictate to the world. They took over the world economically with the Jewish banks. They took over us politically. They took over us in media. The whole world was watching Jewish Hollywood lying movies and promoting this. And at the same time, they were promoting the establishment of Israel, where they can make all their plans for taking over everything and controlling the whole world with complete impunity, because they had their own country. They didn't have to worry about the FBI looking in on them or the local police. And they had Jews from all over the world who were committing criminal acts and fleeing to Israel. I got articles in Israel how Israel's become the promised land for pedophiles. I mean,
Dave, we got to move to the next call.
You got it.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Okay, buddy. Thanks,
what
Richard.
What I will say before I leave is to appeal your Twitter X ban. I would recommend doing that. Mark Collette's got his back. Keep doing it.
I've tried to a couple times, but so far, nothing.
Just keep doing it every week, mate. Thank you very much.
I need to be a little less cogent, maybe a little bit
thanks,
older
Richard.
Brain, and a little less.
No, cogent. I think he's right. I think he's right. When was the last time you appealed it?
2 days ago.
No. When was the last time you appealed?
2 days ago.
Okay, try it again. I think he's right. You're going to get it back.
Maybe I will. I hope
you're going to get it back.
I've got some people fighting for that, and they might be listening to the show right now.
Okay, you will. You'll get it back. All you guys who came in at the end of the show.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
It would take one guy.
All you guys who came in at the end of the show.
Say what?
Andre, Marcus, Russ, Jack, I'm going to have to say you too. Lancastrian Jack, why are you guys coming in so late?
Well, they just wanted to listen.
We got only 5 minutes. Okay. Yeah, well, listen. No, they weren't even in.
Quick answers. Go ahead.
They came in late. We don't have time for any questions. But, you sure?
Sure. Real
quick. Okay. All right. Go ahead, Jack. You got it, buddy.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah, Dr. Duke, I just want to say thanks, Dave. I enjoyed your thoughts, Dr. Duke, on the Larry King situation with Brando. And I was just looking it up there, you know, the Jewish Telegraph Agency, it says here, that this is the contemporary article, it said the Jewish organizations responded with shock and outrage. Abe Foxman said Brando's comments were utterly false. He must apologize for use of an anti-Semitic epithet. But what's interesting, Dr. Duke, is that if, let's say, Brando had accused, let's say, for instance, the people of Sarawak of controlling Hollywood, or the people of the Seychelles or the South Sandwich Islands, it got no grief at all. It seems to me, Dr. Duke, it's only the truth you'll have to apologize for.
That's right. And one thing that comes to my mind very quickly, for instance, the ADL talks about all these so-called anti-Semitic tropes. I mean, a lot of it's true. And there's a lot of evidence, even historically, that when Jews were having these fights with the Christian authorities in Europe, that there were Jews who were caught red-handed poisoning Gentile wells, and they were even tried in the courts of the land where they had testimony, cross-examination, right? And many of them admitted the crimes that they committed, poisoning wells. But they say that was just an anti-Semitic trope. But the interesting thing is, and this shows you the reality of the times, because we have living history every day. There was Benny Morris is one of the most famous Jews, very radical pro-Israel Jew, too. He said that he wanted to nuke Iran. But he also wrote a paper with other Jews at Bar-Ilan University, one of the biggest Jewish universities. And he dug up the original papers from the Jewish military under David Ben-Gurion, who was, by the way, an atheist Jew who also said he believed that the whole world would be controlled by Israel in a few decades. That was his dream. That was his wish for the world. That was his prophecy for the world, that Israel would become the supreme.
Dave, sorry to interrupt. We're out of time.
Well, anyway, he said he...
You got to do the after-show.
Okay.
Because you're on fire.
He proved that Jews were poisoning the wells of Palestinian men, women, and children during the takeover of Palestine. So there you go.
And now they don't bother with that. They just bombed the shit out of them.
Well, they did.
Dave, quick, tell the listeners where they can find you.
All right, Box 188, Mandeville, Louisiana.
Dave, where can the listeners find you?
At rinseradio.com, Rinse Radio. And you can also go to davidduke.com. And you can find my archives at hrradio.net, radio. And you can, I have some great shows this last week, and you can all listen to them, share them, and go to my Odyssey as well at Real David Duke and watch some of my classic videos. They're wonderful, and you'll love the education they provide.
Thanks, Dave. All right, folks, we're done. We're going to see you next week. Happy Mother's Day. Hang out for the after show, because Dave is still on fire. I'm going to try to get you all in.
Don't forget to tune in next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, for the Dave and Duke Call-In Show, where David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke will take your phone calls and discuss whatever questions you want to bring to the table. See you next Sunday.